You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
We have a responsibility to add goodness to the world.
Never quit. Never quit. Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please hit that like and subscribe button if you like to see the show. So today, before we get to our very special guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question. And this is going to cause a stir up, I'm sure. But if you had to eliminate one food item from the world, what would it be?
Oh, what would it be?
Easily mushrooms.
Oh my gosh, we love mushrooms.
I do too. I know, that took her no time at all. I was like, let me think about this. If I had to eliminate one food item, I mean, Colton just got me on this app where it's like, you could see the worst foods ever, right? Yeah, darn it. Okay, one food. I'm trying to think health-wise, but maybe it should just be like McKenna, where it's like just the one thing you personally don't like, right?
Duh.
What, obviously, I don't know what.
I don't like olives. Yeah, I love
olive oil.
I love olive oil. Right. I don't like olives.
It's like ketchup.
I love olives.
All of my friends love olives, and I'm the one that's handing them. I'm picking off my olives off of everything.
Yeah, you don't have to.
I share.
Get rid of one food item.
I'm gonna say escargot. Who wants to eat a snail, and why are you eating?
I've never eaten a snail.
Right?
Don't they serve multiple purposes besides?
I don't know. Why are we eating them?
I feel like those are kind of part of the food chain.
Well, we can keep snails around.
Yeah,
just
snails can be alive. We just can't eat them.
That's right.
We can't.
Have you ever had those?
I can't remember. I feel like if I'm adventurous enough, maybe I tried one once, but I really didn't want to.
Adventurous,
I grew up in
Oregon. Is that what you called it?
Yeah, I think I'm adventurous.
That's good.
Yeah, well, with food, like, you know, but I grew up in Oregon, and snails and slugs, like, I was stepping down our pathway out of our house trying to avoid stepping on one. They're disgusting. Mm-hmm. So to me, to eat one of those... Isn't it a slug in a shell, basically?
I think it is. And I specifically remember South Houston one year, and it rained a lot. And for some reason, I've never seen this happen since then. I was probably 9 years old. And our sidewalks were covered in slugs.
Nasty.
And I, someone told me that salt kills slugs.
Yeah.
So I took our big thing of salt and I walked out there and I poured it on all.
Did you not feel bad?
No.
See, that's my other problems. I always feel bad for things. Like, I don't want them there, but I feel bad.
Not snails. You can't feel, or slugs. You can't feel bad.
Can't feel bad. Yeah, gets
they
get
probably
tougher.
Don't even have a brain.
See,
yeah, maybe not.
I kind of want to go the devious route and pick something that everybody loves.
Just to cause a
just
stir.
To cause, I want to cause wars and mobs and
yeah.
people burning down buildings.
Yeah.
And
like nerd clusters or something?
No, I'm going to go with like pizza, pasta. Let's go crazy. I'm ready to go crazy.
All right, if you really want to piss everybody off, then I'm getting rid of alcohol.
Well, oh, I like that. I like that.
I'm okay with that. The rest of your listeners are going to be pissed. I'm good with it.
I'm good with
sugar.
Alcohol. I should have said the alcohol thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sugar.
Yeah, that's kind of rude.
That's rude.
Did you get rid of alcohol since you're about to get into
no,
it?
No, sugar.
Oh, sugar. That's rude, too, right?
Yeah,
that's
both are rude.
Candy.
Yeah.
Candy?
That's fair.
Marcus isn't a candy person. I grew up a candy person. Yeah.
But it is unhealthy. So when I was looking for the health food, I mean, taking away sugar actually would be great. Because a lot of people are getting
addicted to it. I said
alcohol.
I didn't say candy. I was just going, just messing with her. I got a strong connection with the candy family now.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
to all my candy family out there, I love y'all.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Marcus did a, he had a speech with the confectioner makers of the world.
It was all the candy makers.
Oh. Yes.
It was the sweetest thing I've ever done.
Nice.
See what I did there?
Well played.
They were awesome. It was a lot of fun. I would not get rid of candy. It makes the world a sweeter place.
Okay, well, it's just not that healthy. I'm going to piss them off. Unless they pay well.
I think
well.
We should have to make some sacrifices, Taya, for a little sweeter world, okay?
All right, fair enough.
I said something. I was talking to somebody
Willy
the other
Wonka
day.
Here.
Oh, what's that?
We got Willy Wonka here.
Yeah, basically. I mean,
how great was that movie? Have you seen the new one?
I've heard it's amazing.
Is it?
That's what I've heard.
See, I got stuck on the old school Willy Wonka, man. I can't get past that.
So you're not even going to try it?
Nope.
Okay.
I'm one of those guys.
I'm loyal,
too. Same way with the Ghostbuster franchise.
Yes.
Oh, I like
the original.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
I'm hardcore old school right there. I'm back in the 1900s.
Yes. Like, I will burn myself, basically, just because I'm loyal to somebody or
something. The 80s movies, man.
Yeah.
They rocked. All right, that was a good question.
Yeah.
Okay, well, he can still answer it.
Bread. Black licorice.
How dare you?
I love bread.
Black licorice is a good one.
That's a good one.
Because most people would agree with it.
I do not like black licorice at all.
Yeah. There's some black licorice.
Oh, I know what I know what I'd get rid of. I'd get rid of popcorn. Or no, corn.
Corn?
Hold on. Let him restate it.
I would get rid of corn entirely.
Really?
What?
Why?
Yeah, because although popcorn's good, I hate everything else that corn comes on.
Corn tortillas?
Yeah, I don't really, not worth it.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. Corn. I apologize for him.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you what, man. I don't know about it.
I don't know.
Buttered corn is good.
Yeah, buttered corn.
And the Mexican corn, the elote.
Corn chips? Oh, my God. Tortilla chips.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I think. I mean, you put
what do you think? You can't say it, but this is an open mic.
But
you see it. You see the corn.
I know what you're talking about. The remnants.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. All right. Good joke.
Well, it's actually supposed to be true though that you can't really digest it. Yeah.
I mean, you feed it to pigs because it's like cheap and you can mass produce it and yeah. I mean, I don't want that.
I do think about that when I eat corn sometimes.
My girlfriend. You actually think about stuff like that when you eat?
All the time.
I don't.
I think
really?
About everything. Yeah.
You just think about eating and consuming?
No.
Oh, that's all that's on my mind.
Really?
I've never thought about a calorie or anything. That doesn't even compute in my head. When food
Colton and I were just talking about
like that.
He's like, when did you start thinking that way? I'm like, as a kid.
If I felt that way, I'd be like 300 pounds by now. I'm not kidding.
If I didn't think about it,
I would be.
Okay, that's on your podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, mind your own business back there. We're dealing with the sis and your mom. All right.
Or just join us and have your own. Right. I don't know.
McKenna,
do you think
Taya?
About it or just consume? She just consumes. She'll eat Cheez-Its for a meal, so she
so
just consumes.
Good.
Chicken nuggets are great.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. She could live on them. Okay.
Well, girl, thanks for coming back here and doing this.
Yeah, thank you.
Good to see you again.
Thank you. It's good to be
here.
You
got the kids with you.
I know. I got my
It's been a few years. We're trying to figure out when the last time we actually were face-to-face. You said it was almost 4 years?
Melanie said that. I would not have thought that. And I also proclaim right now we never go that long again.
Never.
That's stupid. But it doesn't feel that long because we talk.
We talk, yeah. We text.
Daily.
Yeah, all the time.
So
distance doesn't even, it's not even.
It doesn't feel like it, yeah.
I think y'all should uproot and move down here.
Okay, let me tell you.
Or y'all could move.
Oh, no.
Good luck with that.
Oh, no, we won't.
Nobody would throw that right back at us, right? It's like, why don't y'all move? It's like, well, all right, let's talk about this for a second now.
Although McKenna did say driving up here, she was like, I wonder what it
like means. I couldn't imagine growing up here. Like, that's so cool.
In your, it, like, your property.
It is cool.
Yeah. The driveway.
It's paradise. Cool. That's why we don't move.
Yeah.
We have trees.
We have
lots of
trees. I planted a bunch of them at my house. I mean, okay, so what about floods, hurricanes, all that stuff?
We have all that for you.
We have it all.
We had that here. You can come down here. We got it.
I don't want it. That's what I'm saying. That's why maybe we stay there, because y'all are always having floods.
It's kind of fun, though. Yeah. Like, you get out of school.
You have to help people that lose their houses.
You have to help people.
That's how we meet our neighbors.
But we would have Mama Holly.
Because, you know, this day and age, most people don't like to meet their neighbors.
You would have Mama Holly.
Yeah, we'd have her. We'd be invincible.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Mama Holly stories are legendary. I retell the time when somebody came on the property and Melanie was ready to like shoot someone basically, and it was just Mama Holly out there patrolling.
Ready with a shotgun.
Yeah. With a shotgun. It's like
she actually found the person and grabbed him by the back of the neck and cussed him out like a sailor and scared the...
My mother's actually shot at people.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
I thought y'all were aware of that, right?
No, yeah. Oh, okay. Gosh. So one of my favorite stories...
Catholic woman. Yeah, lovely to be around. Great cook.
We love her. I feel like McKenna will be like Mama Holly when she's older.
Put a bullet right through you.
I hope so.
So she... I remember the stories of like you guys would have parties outside your house and people would pull up and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what I retell. So if, you know... If it's not true, it's still a good story. That all the people would pull up outside your house, and then when it was time, she'd get out on the front porch and shoot off the shotgun and be like, all you hussies better get on home.
She would.
And then I said...
That's a true story.
I think she said whores.
All you whores? Okay, yeah. So if there were girls in the cars, they should not be... They're whores. They shouldn't have been there, right? With all the boys. And so I said, well, I said, Holly, were the boys like kind of irritated when they came in? No, baby, they weren't irritated at all. No, they just came in and I fed them.
Yeah.
There was food in there, and then we went straight to bed.
Yeah, it was
fine. That's a true story.
That's a true story.
That's hilarious. That happens a lot. I love
that. And I'm talking about there's a bunch of us.
I know. Okay, so I tried to set your mom up with someone once, and I can let...
Yes.
Yeah. No. Listen, Marcus, I asked you. I asked your permission afterwards.
This isn't my conversation for me.
No. Listen. I asked you this one, and I won't say who it is unless you want me to, but it was one person I said...
Don't tell me.
I said, no, I'm not going to say it now, but I said it's this person, and you were like, okay, that's it, but that's the only one you can do.
Oh, Terry Bradshaw?
Terry Bradshaw. Oh, okay, yes, yes. Okay, yes.
I was cool with that.
So,
I'm still cool with that. But I'm a big fan of that man.
Okay, so here's the problem. He's married to someone that's like 40 years old.
Okay, so at the time he wasn't though. And as I was listening to him talk, I'm like, oh, he's perfect for Holly. So I started texting her.
Oh, wait, there was another one too, John Voight.
I didn't do that. Somebody else said
that's who she wants. Yeah. That's who she wants.
Well, listen, this is why I thought it was a God thing though, because I'm at this thing and I'm looking and I go, hey, Holly, this is crazy, but like I'm at this place. I think like Terry Bradshaw would be perfect for you. And she goes, oh, baby, I always thought that myself. I loved him. I always thought we'd be great together. You know, he's the kind of guy. So I go up to him afterwards, and I was so nervous to say this. I'm like, listen, I know this sounds strange, and probably people say this to you, but like, I have somebody I think you should meet that's going to be, you know, whatever. But stupid me, I say, okay, so it's Marcus Luttrell's mom. And I said, most people, if they wanted to date his mom, he'd probably kill him. You know, and I shouldn't have said that because I instantly saw his mood change. You know what I mean?
Like, shoulder shift.
Yeah, he kind of went oh yeah, well I don't want to be killed by Marcus Luttrell. So
real mean.
But I wasn't thinking about Morgan. I was just thinking about you. And I thought, man, if I'm ever going to set somebody up again, I probably shouldn't tell them that their life is at risk.
Because I would tell people that he was my stepfather.
That's what you said after, but I didn't know it at the time. I said, I just messed it up. So I have my apologies to Holly. And then I got her hopes up. And I'm like, well, I'll give you her number. And I wrote down the number, and then. He didn't ever call, and that pissed me off.
I'm pretty sure he was married.
He wasn't married at the time.
Oh, he wasn't for sure?
No, I would never do that. You know I'm like a marriage.
Okay. That's right. Okay, yeah. I remember that conversation. And,
yeah. And John Voight, is he still single? What do we need to do to get a hold of John Voight?
Both those guys are great. Those two.
Okay, they're the only ones, though.
Yeah.
All right, well, if anybody knows him and he's single,
you
know, contact the show.
Yeah, She's single and ready. Yeah.
Marcus doesn't want to hear that.
We can move on. Unless you've got a book.
I do.
Let's talk about
perfect
that.
Perfect time for prayer. We'll switch to Prayers for Bears. Yeah. Prayers for Bears. This is a Mama Holly approved book.
So last time we were together, we were on Patriot Tour.
Yes.
Oh, last time we were together.
Not we were together, but.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Publicly, like professionally.
And in all that, what have you been doing since then?
Wishing that Patriot Tour would come back.
It was fun, wasn't it?
Right? Yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. Yes.
I loved it.
Okay, so tell them what you remember about it.
Yeah, let's talk about who you got in here with you now.
I've got my daughter, McKenna Kyle.
Were you going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say a lot of people don't realize that Patriot Tour for us was a family affair.
Exactly.
We brought the kids along. Taya brought the kids to every show. So we all got to be a part of this. And for the public, no one ever saw the kids.
Yeah.
But for us, that's one of my favorite things about Patriot Tour was all of us traveling as families.
100%. And McKenna, I want you to say what you remember. But just real quickly, I remember Hunter was the person that still will stand out that every time I'd see him, because it wouldn't be that long, but he had grown up in between the time when we do the tour so much. You were at that age, like middle school, high school, and it just made me like, oh my God, Colton's going to grow up that fast too. So it was your life and watching those massive leaps in between what I felt was a very short time that made me think more about like, don't ever take a second for granted. So McKenna, you have not also been on a podcast ever before. So this is your first podcast. And you have not been out in public very much, so welcome, like, to your first podcast.
Yes, right?
I can't think of better guests, a better place for you to start.
Yes.
Tell us what you remember about Patriot Tour.
It was so much fun, and there was always good food. Yes. I loved traveling, and everyone there was so nice. David Goggins, he was awesome.
He is.
Yeah.
We would play with, like, we would take him into the room and, like, play cards with him and stuff. And, you know, nobody sees David laugh, but he laughed a lot with us. I mean, you're funny. So I think he laughed a lot with that. And he was very good with, like, kids. I don't think you see him ever with kids.
It's the best thing you've ever witnessed to see him laugh.
Yes. It's amazing, right?
I mean, when he lets off, like, when he breaks down, when that kid and his and him got killed a long time ago. Yep. So, but every now and again, he'll break that sucker open. I remember that.
Yeah. It's so fun.
I remember him during Patriot Tour, he was the life of that party.
Yeah.
When he wanted to be. Otherwise, he was really, really quiet.
Well, he's running.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
He's stretching.
But do you know, I remember one time, Marcus.
I remember all y'all gathering in the lobby of the hotels waiting for him to come in.
You did? When he was
all
running?
All y'all, after he just got done running because he just had his shorts on.
I did not. I was not part of that.
Whatever. There was guys even in there waiting for him to walk in, all right?
Okay, fine. Fair enough.
That was so much fun growing up, watching y'all grow up out there on the road like that.
Yes. Yeah. I want to say one. I know I keep interrupting.
Mr. Rigsby, too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Rigsby was such a great part of Patriot Tour because he went to everything and.
Yeah. So I will say I remember, though, one time you were on stage, and I think it's the only time you ever mad dogged me. I think. I don't know. But I remember just going, oh, shit. But David and I were on the side and we started laughing about something. You know how you get like a case of the like
giggles.
Yeah. Oh my God. And we just started laughing and laughing and you were on stage and we were just like stage right. And I was like, shh, shh, you know, but we were just in that place where you can't stop laughing. And I remember a couple times you looked over and you were like about to walk off the stage and shut us up. I was like, oh God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Dude, if you see somebody having that good of a time, I want to be a part of it.
That's true. That's also
like,
true.
Dude, what are y'all laughing about?
Well, you're talking about serious stuff. Like people are dying.
I was trying to be serious out there, right?
And we're over there laughing. It's like, it's so inappropriate. I do remember you, like, the guys, when you were so little and they would like hold out their arms afterwards and you guys would play on them like they were jungle gyms. And because, you know, everybody's so strong and you're teeny tiny. And
yeah, I feel like nobody ever really saw that side of all the guys, but they were super sweet.
Super sweet and funny, yeah.
I know. Patriot Tour was family for us.
Yeah. I was thinking about that the other day, though. It's amazing that when you think about it, it really is amazing that you guys pulled that off. Like a tour of people, we all did that. You know, if Melanie hadn't been leading it, like, okay, we'll do it. We'll make it happen. Who'd have thought that people would come and, I mean, I get it, but who would have the courage to say, like, we're going to go out and do this, all of us, and it's going to work?
Okay, so we're putting it out there. If someone wants to sponsor another Patriot Tour, you would have to sponsor the whole thing.
Yeah.
Up front.
Yes. Yeah, up front. Yeah, exactly.
Then we would put on an awesome Patriot Tour.
Be amazing.
Mind if I ask you a question, McKenna?
Yeah.
You grew up in a world of that there was a lot going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're kind of an example for a lot of people. And you don't even know that. Growing up, being around us, being around everything that happened to you, what are some of the things that you held on to that got you to where you are now? If you don't mind me asking, I'm just curious.
No, that's a good question.
We've been through a lot together, and I never asked you that.
God, definitely. But I don't remember a whole lot. I feel like I blocked a lot of it out.
Okay.
But my mom and brother and God, I feel like that was my main thing.
And you can speak to this too, McKenna, but because sometimes they look at me when you're in that shock and adrenaline phase, you don't always remember everything. I think one of the ways that you got through it, McKenna, is you started a protective streak for, like, in counseling years later, the counselor was asking you something and you said, well, no, I just felt protective. Like, I remember feeling really protective. Like, that was her response. And she said, of who? And you would think that it would be of herself. She's a little girl, right? And she said, of my brother. And you know, she's the younger sister, but I think a lot of how you got through that time was you were so hypervigilant and watching out for everybody you loved. And so you disconnected from yourself. And so we've had a lot of stuff just recently of her coming back to herself and paying attention to herself. And it ended up, you know, it serves you well until it doesn't. Like, your coping mechanism will serve you well up to a point, and then it's got a negative effect.
Sure.
And
I thought it was a lot easier to focus on my mom and brother than to focus on my own stuff going on. But obviously that's not how that works.
It doesn't work long term. It's very sweet. But, you know, we learned a lot, too, because Colton is very strategic. And McKenna is very, like, we've done the strength finder that we use for our foundation, right? So, and McKenna's, like, positivity and empathy. And so if she would feel something in the mood, like, going down, she would, like, get into entertainment mode and whatever. And Colton's, like, strategy mode would be, like, do exactly what mom says and exactly the way she says, and everybody's happy and we go on. And she'd go to entertainment mode. And then Colton and I would turn on her and be like, why are you doing this? Because we didn't understand at the time that she was bringing her gifts to the table, right? Mm-hmm. We just thought, like, why are you not getting this? So I think the other part of that is it disconnected you from yourself even more, thinking, well, what I'm offering kind of isn't working. And then maybe share with them, because I think they could relate to this too, but we kind of had that epiphany recently of when her, since positivity is her strength, when the day she found out Chris was killed, I was sitting on the lawn and I said, Daddy's been hurt. And the tears are like coming down my face. And McKenna said, is he dead? And I never knew why until a couple years ago. She said, no, I was asking that because I knew the answer was going to be no. And then I was going to tell you everything else is fine then. Like, as long as he's not dead, we're fine. And so when I shook my head yes, like, the sound that came out of her is like one I'll never forget. Like, it's guttural. But she, and I'm going to let you talk to finish this, but you thought your life was perfect before that.
Yeah.
Like, even as a little girl, not every girl, I don't think not every kid appreciates that they think their life is perfect. It's just what they know. But she literally had the thought, I have the perfect life. And so tell them kind of what you did since then that we just realized.
I kind of always looked at everything as negative and tried to find the negative in things. Even like the people I had around me were people who had gone through lots and lots of abuse. And so they kind of saw the world as awful too, because that's what they had experienced. And that was a lot easier for me than thinking that something could be perfect again or good again and that I could lose that.
So isn't that interesting? And like, she didn't that do it consciously. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just came on as soon as you got the news.
Yeah.
You remember feeling like as soon as you got that news, a weight kind of felt like you put something on.
Yeah.
It's almost like a protective thing of, well, nothing can be worse if I'm already creating bad.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
Now you, like, keep yourself from it so you don't have to experience it.
Right. Yeah.
Never experience goodness again.
You don't want to experience... You rather not experience goodness because you don't want to feel the loss of goodness.
Exactly. 100%.
That hurts.
Yeah.
This place is designed for that.
Yeah.
Once you got a big old gulp of that when y'all were kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's... We live our whole lives experiencing that all the way up to when you're an elder and your friend. It's like part of it. You just got, y'all got introduced to it early.
Yeah.
But that does happen. The power is when you push back and become a light for somebody as opposed to just kind of welding into the darkness.
Yeah. I think that's something that my brother has definitely helped me with, especially as he's helping me start to see things as positive, which is difficult for me because I've been in the habit of just everything's negative, but even things like, this was in the People magazine article, but I love birds. Like, they're so cute to me. And so every time I see birds, that makes me happy. And I'm like, oh, okay, things are good. And squirrels, animals, I don't know, stuff like that.
Just nature itself, nature. Right? And yeah. But at first she was saying, well, why could I say that is, I remember you asking Colton, you were like, well, I can't really see that as a blessing, though. It's all over the place. Like, maybe that's, and he was like, just because you get a blessing often doesn't make it any less of a blessing. And you were like, oh yeah, that's a good point. And I remember too, because you're not like, one of your top strengths is positivity, but you chose to shut down your strength, subconsciously chose it to do all these other things. And then our life, like it with all the people coming after us and the lawsuits and loss of family and things that we didn't expect, it just continued to reinforce, that's right, McKenna, don't even get attached to family, because not only is your dad gone, but these people are gone, these people are gone. Not only are they gone, but they're going to do horrible things to you in the process. And so it just made her world smaller and smaller. So just go find people who are so, you know, broken themselves that they, you know. And so to come out of that is God's grace. Like, it's 100% God's grace. And I remember thinking... you were very bold about, you had a lot of experiences with God, but then, you know, you also were starting to do that wrestling part when you were kind of coming back to yourself of, I'm not really sure you know, about why he would even create a world with all this suffering. Like, we can accept it, but why would you do that? You know, I remember you saying, if let's say we were talking about God being a creator, and you were like, if I created puppies and they were adorable and I loved them, I would never put them in a world where they would get hurt, you know? And so you coming out of that, I think, has been really fascinating and powerful. And Colton said too, he said, I've never seen an example of spiritual warfare as much as I saw it with McKenna. Like, the spiritual warfare against her versus where you are today.
Yeah.
Like, it was like watching my child come back. Like my little girl come back, and you're like this light and happiness and love and faith and Bible studies. She's like leading, and like everything's back. But it took us, I don't want to get into the weeds with it, but it took a lot. And honestly, it took God teaching me a lot too. I remember somebody saying I kept thinking people are praying for her, 'cause she left home for a little while. And I was like, a lot of people are praying for her. And somebody said, there's nothing more powerful than the prayer of a mother. And so I just like was like, really? Because I thought all these, I was praying for her, but not as specifically as I should have. I think I was afraid too, like what it will mean if that's not answered or something. I don't actually know. That's for a therapy conversation later. But watching her come back and realizing part of McKenna's strength, she's always been super strong, like steel strong. She's like you, Melanie, where you're like so sweet on the outside and then just freaking steel. Like, I'd never want to piss off Melanie Luttrell, let me tell you. Like, as sweet as you are, I also know you don't play.
Best piece of advice ever come out of this podcast.
Exactly. But
I've still got work to do on that, though.
Everybody. That's
what life is.
Everybody has work.
That is life in itself.
Yes. Yeah. But her strength taught me and teaches Colton, too. Like, I kept thinking, if I just keep going along the way I'm going, McKenna will come along, right? And her little heart and mind and soul and the way that God made her was like, no, Taya, you go to her. You do it her way. And I think that's what I was really missing is like, you know, if you were down in like a dark place or whatever and wanted to watch TV all day, I don't care what work, I don't care what productivity, I don't care what I believe in life, I needed to go watch TV with you all day. And that was actually a big thing that we started doing, is like just watching a lot of kind of TV together and just being together and talking. And the other part of it was, I remember telling you that looking in your eyes, you've got these gorgeous big brown eyes and you have so much depth. I had this moment where I could not believe that I felt this way, but I never knew it was the truth until I realized I cannot keep eye contact with her very much. And so I was like, I told her, I said, McKenna, I just realized something. I have a hard time making eye contact with you. I have my own wounding from my own childhood with my mom and women and relationships and stuff. Her whole life, I think I've diverted my eyes, like listened, but diverted my eyes. And now I look at you and like we connect, we seriously connect. She used to not like hold my hand very much and not do all these things. And I'd be like, let me rub your back, I'm good. And now that I think it's like I am unafraid and blessed to connect on a deeper level with you. Like I rub your back all the time now. And like I'm rubbing her arm and she's like, why'd you stop? You know, do mm-hmm. that again. And so the miraculous part of this is she's 18 and God is still allowing us this time to heal whatever was broken in the years that were taken. Right? But you can speak to that probably better than I can. But do you even remember what it was like to have a mom who wasn't as engaged the way you needed it?
I feel like I remember you as very busy and stressed out, a lot of hurt, pretty angry sometimes, but
very, yeah.
I don't think I really remember you as, I feel like I just remember you as still doing everything that you could, and I feel like that was more than enough.
Yeah, it was sweet. It was sweet. I mean, and I appreciate that, but yeah, it's your vision of that. So what she needed me to do was stop and relax mm-hmm. and just be with her and not
what
be so busy.
What age was that?
That
you like kind of just shut your mom off and everything around, or you said you left home for a little bit. What age was that?
17.
Oh, was it 17?
Yeah, it was just last year. And honestly, there's a whole thing with that too, that you think it's like that's a horrible thing, but I also learned a lot through that, and I realized like I really needed to do some things differently. And I was so stuck in no, that like you're in life, you be productive, you do these things, mm-hmm. you have to get on board. Don't just And she's so strong in who she is that it really...
Stubborn, you can say that.
No, but in a good way. I mean, I've said this since day one, too. Like, the hardest kids to raise are going to be the best adults, mm-hmm. right? Because stubbornness or hard-headedness is the person that will get married and never leave you. It's the loyal friend that will never leave you, right? It's the person that's so convicted of what they believe in that you can't get them off of it. And so... But I don't think I realized how she saw me as much until the last couple of years. And so it's been a huge blessing. And I remember, Melanie, you and I talked about this and you mentioned that I should share it. Is I remember McKenna laying down next to me one time and feeling like there was a window of time that a parent is supposed to do something. And I can't remember what it was really, but it was like, you know, you got to establish connection or you got to establish something that I felt like I had missed. And I was just heartbroken. And she was asleep next to me, and I just was praying. And I was like, first of all, God, forgive me that I broke her heart in these ways. And second of all, I can't fix it. Can you fix it for me? Can you go back and mend what I've broken in her? And it was like a very deep pain because, you know, the last thing you want to do is hurt your kids. And I remember waking up the next day. I think it was about her self-esteem. And the next day I woke up, and she was, like, more confident. And I asked, I also prayed, let me see her the way the Holy Spirit sees her because I'm missing something. Because if you trust somebody, you'll share, like, all. But if not, you'll keep so much close to the vest that I couldn't get it out of her, you know? And the next morning, I did wake up and see you differently and see kind of why you were doing something. But we're like, I would consider you, you and Colton, you know, not that you have to be my friends, but you're like my best people, you know, you're my favorites. And yeah. I feel like we're just kind of inseparable now, and God blessed us with, but
absolutely. Yeah.
That's so powerful though, just as a parent, because we all make mistakes and we're all learning. We're not born parents. Right. So we have to, it's all through a learning phase. And just as humans, we're always praying for something.
Yeah.
You know, like for a situation, usually, you know, whether it's financial or whatever or work, we tend to pray for what we think we need.
Yes.
Or for if we know someone that's sick, like our prayers will be focused towards that. But praying for our children and praying for us to be better parents mm-hmm. needs to be implemented more, I think, as a whole society.
Yes.
Just as an entire society, if we really just focus that prayer time mm-hmm. on our kids, I think so much would be different. Because, you just shared it. There is a power in prayer.
Yes, parents praying is a big deal. There's a philosophy I have, too, that I don't remember when I started to see this, but I thought, okay, so you guys have an older child and then younger children. So if you were leaving the home and you said to Hunter, take care of the kids, take care of Axe Natty, right? You would say, hey, take care of them. I don't expect you to have all the answers, though. Call me if you have a problem, right? And make sure that they're safe. Do the best you can. But ultimately, their well-being is on me, not you. And but you'd want Hunter to call you mm-hmm. if he had a question, right? And that's how I see God. We are the teenagers mm-hmm. and his children are like Colton and McKenna. And so we're not supposed to just know everything and how to do it. We're supposed to go and ask the parent, like, Father, tell me what to do as the teenager, the one that's inexperienced here. How do I do this with them?
Or you handle it.
Or you handle it. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Just lay that on his plate for him to take care of, because we can't always do that.
Yeah. Marcus, what do you think? So as a man and a father, you're supposed to be the lead of your household and all of that. What is it like for you to submit to God on parenting? Like, does it feel a little bit uncomfortable, unnatural? Like, what's that like?
No, it gives you certainty.
Okay.
If I'm trying to do it, then it's going to be all messed up and all over the place.
Yeah.
But then when you step in, our roles are different.
Yeah.
Men, your dad's for your discipline, your mother's for your manners.
Yeah.
Period. And I'm not your friend.
Mm-hmm.
I tell my kids that all the time. My father told me that. I'm not your friend at all. We're not buddies. You understand me? There's one person down here who's got to keep you in check, because humans by design do stupid things, especially when you're growing up. Nobody does it more than the parent.
Yep.
So, you
Mel said it perfect. It's almost like the minute you become a parent, you get that father status. It's like starting over in kindergarten with the baby. And we kind of, you go to 12 years old, I'm in the 12th grade. You go to, so we got to keep climbing because something new happens. And then y'all change. There's this midlife shift where this rocket fuel gets stuck into you, right? And then we got to kind of look at something that, like ourselves, mm-hmm. that's being developed in front of you. And it's the beautiful thing in life. Mm-hmm. If our parents, if we were so inclined, there wouldn't be a problem down here if all we did was focus on our kids and everyone else's kids instead of ourselves. Worrying about how good we looked, who we were sexing, all that stuff like that, how much money you had. If none of that was important to us, if you made your success so you can turn around and give it back to your kids, then we wouldn't have any problems down here. You definitely wouldn't build rockets and weapons because kids can kill each other with that.
Yeah. So that's a huge point. Honestly, the thing about, I've looked at the two-income household, and I think there was sort of a downfall, right? It started in the 80s and the lock.
80s.
80s, right?
Yep.
And then once two people start working, then the kids' friends are going on vacations, and you're like, well, we better, and everybody has a nicer house, so we better, you know. And so then
the divorce thing kicked in with us.
Then the divorce, yep. So divorce kicks in, and then everything shifts, right? And I sometimes wonder if we're not going to go back to like a homesteading type thing, right, where more people are working from home. Mm-hmm. But where maybe we get a little bit more humble, or maybe it's just that people can work from home. But that would be my thing, is the parents are losing the time with the kids and they're expecting the schools to do it. And schools right now, like I advise every single person to, unless you have an amazing private school, just homeschool, be done. Because mm-hmm. the schools, even the best schools right now, they can't, marijuana, vaping, weed, they can't take control of that. Fighting, they can't take it. The principals have no power. The teachers have no power, right? So they can't discipline the kids. The kids have all the power. It doesn't work. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like there's no controlling it, and schools can try as hard as they want, but they can't control it. And just last month I heard at this school they have issues a lot with fighting and drugs and stuff like that, and sometimes threats, and they keep trying to be more protective against that. But just last month there was a kid who was telling the teacher that he was gonna kill her and left school and came back with a gun. The cops got him because the teacher had told the principal, and so nothing happened. But it's like, still people just think that's, I don't know, they're so clouded in their judgment that they think
it's almost been normalized, right? Know. A school shooting. I hate to say that, but I do think that. So like this kid, all she did was discipline him, right? He was already in like a situation where he was in like the disciplined kind of class. Almost like, what did we have?
It's like an alternative school, but it's in a classroom.
In a classroom. So like he had to be, and then she just, you know, is trying to enforce that, but there's no enforcement I don't know this family. I think a lot of times
I think you can confidently say that there's nothing.
Not a lot of enforcement at home.
That's why they act like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because no one's taught them the right way.
Right.
And if you bust their ass, if you get an alpha bull in there, then they won't act like that.
Yeah, exactly.
That is a fact.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't care how mentally incompetent they are.
Yep.
What's wrong with them? If they're completely deformed and can't function, if there's an alpha in there that will whip their ass when they get out of line, that sucker won't get out of line. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Primal. Yep. So you know what's funny about that is Colton in second grade, I think it was second grade, we were driving and I got out of the car to walk one of the little kids out. My sister happened to be there. And she said, yeah, Colton told me an interesting thing today. And he said, I've watched. And he said, I'll tell you what, if it's a good kid and you mess with him, he'll tell. But if you beat on a bully, he'll never tell. And I just started to laugh because the Colton's thing already was like, he takes care of business when he was second grade. And he's like, I'm strategic about it, because he wasn't like, he didn't need to fight somebody. But if somebody was a bully, that's how we raised them, right? If you're a bully, have it stop. And he's like, yeah, the bullies, they don't tell, because they need an alpha to come in there and
show
them. I will
bust you in the head till I get to the white meat.
Yep.
I mean, and they need to know that.
That's right. That's right. And second grade.
And when they leave, kids, you know, they're going to do their thing around like that. But if you got one of those suckers in there and the parents let them do their thing, there won't be a problem.
Yep.
You can end that overnight.
Yep.
If you let the alphas back in there.
Okay, so Chris, this is kind of funny. I think you'll appreciate this. So Colton was little. I'm talking like 2.5, 3. And he's overseas, and he calls me and asks about the day. I'm like, oh, it's pretty good. I said, we had so-and-so's kid over, and like, nice kid and stuff, but he hit him in the head. He kept hitting him in the head with these, like, metal cars, you know, like the... And Chris was like, what? And I said, yeah, I mean, it's just kid stuff or whatever. He's like, mm-mm. He's like, when I get home, I'm teaching Bubba how to choke somebody out. I'm like, Colton, he's 3. Like, this is not a good idea, right? But you know what? He didn't tell me, and he did teach Colton how to choke somebody out. And so then, like, Colton's like 4 and a half.
Because Chris could do that.
Yeah, right? And then we're yes, he's kind of known for it.
He was good at that.
Yeah, exactly. So he's at our neighbor's house, and we're still very good friends with these people. But they had an older son and a younger son. The younger son was older than Colton. And Chris goes, yeah, I'm just sitting there talking to the dad, you know. And all of a sudden, I look over, and Colton has the other kid in a chokehold, and he's just going down, right?
And I remember that story.
Yeah, I think you do.
I heard that story. Yeah.
And then Chris was like, I don't know if we're going to be friends anymore. Like, I don't know if we're going to be friends with this guy anymore.
Okay, let me put some more rules in here for
the
neighbors.
Yeah, exactly. No, he didn't get And then the other dad goes, he goes, Joey, what did I tell you about messing with the SEALs kid? You know what I mean? And I was like,
I taught my kid to do that at a young age.
Yes. Oh, I'm like, Chris, you shouldn't have taught him that. What if he does it wrong? And he's like, I mean, I taught him the way to do it right. You know, I'm like, oh my God. He did it right. Yeah.
I mean, there are the kids in the school that don't get messed with. They're the ones that learn how to do that.
Yes. Yeah.
Someone has to teach you how to control violence because this place is violent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even people who are nice, good natured, when they want something, most people will look at that as violence when they go to get it, even though they're being good. It depends on where you sit in the rung. Yeah. And you can also move yourself on the rung. Yeah. Then the primitive instinct, that's what you said, primal, right?
Yeah, primal.
Fight, feed, and breed. Like when everything's everything, we got everything we want, it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel
stuff
like
starts falling apart, it's different.
That's interesting that you said that, because the other day I was talking to this girl about how in school nobody really ever messed with Colton. And a lot of people were like, they didn't want to mess with me either. And they literally, people would be like, oh, that's Colton Kyle's sister. And like, they wouldn't do anything to me. And so that's literally what I was known as, Colton Kyle's sister.
Well, it goes a little deeper than that. Yeah. Let me tell you about your daddy. All right. You're old enough now.
Yeah. And
world famous. How dangerous that man is.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was telling this girl about that, and she was like, that's so weird. Did he fight people? And I was like, no, I was like, he actually never needed to or anything. He, like, people just never messed with him. And so
I think the
like,
way
he didn't need
himself
to be violent. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know what you're saying too, Marcus, like it could have had something to do with Chris, but I think maybe early in the playground show could get out and you get, you know what I mean? And that's,
yeah.
But also he was just confident. Yeah, exactly. But he was just confident and very kind, you know,
that's
and
where
I
it
think,
comes from.
Yes. Right. If you're confident and kind, but somebody knows you're capable of violence, if they
need
mess
those
with
three
you
things.
Yep, that's right.
The mind, body, and spirit.
Yep.
When you walk up, you can tell.
Yeah.
The eyes eat first.
Yeah.
Women, y'all have your spidey sense never goes away.
Yeah.
Like guys kind of gets, you can instinctually train that out of them, especially when we pack up.
Yeah.
But when that sucker starts going off, you know it. And there's people when they walk in the room, you can feel it.
Yeah.
And even fighters, professional fighters who are bullies, oh, they see something walk in the door they know can handle themselves, they'll just go to the next one.
Yep, yep.
At the very least, that's why you want to learn how to do that, how to stand properly, how to conduct yourself properly. The way you move tells everybody. If you walk fast, people are like, oh, he's in a hurry. He's kind of, you know, that tells everybody off. Your pace, slow is smooth, smooth is fast. Very, very important.
Yeah.
And this comes with time. I mean, at a young age, you're focused on one thing and one thing only usually. And as you grow older, you either get bored with it or you get good at it, right? And you'll go to the next one.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what's happening to y'all.
Yeah, it must be kind of genetic too, right? Because McKenna would be, from the time she's little or younger, I shouldn't say little, like 12 or something, you know, walking. And she's like, I got my knife. I'm like, what are you going to do with that knife? Like, do you know how to use that knife? She's like, I'll figure it out. You know,
oh
I'll do
gosh
it. Yeah. And so, and then now she's like, well, I'm, you know, carrying concealed and I'm going to do all. And I think I would never in a million years at that age have done that. I mean, even before my kids were born, I was like, Chris, if somebody breaks in, like I'd probably jump off the balcony or I don't think I could shoot someone. Right. Until Colton was born. I was like, show me how to load that thing and get me a tight grouping. You know what I mean? Yeah. Now it's on.
Well, it happens but, overnight.
You know? Yeah,
shit,
it does.
How about that?
Yeah, I know. It's cool. But I didn't have it at their age. And they're both like, no, we're, you know, like, and you hang out with the sheriff's deputies all the time at Sheriff Wayburn's social
media.
That's
because y'all have great cops.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. How important is it to have an adult role model around you? Like an adult, not a kid in an adult body, but like people to look to for guidance.
I definitely think that's important for sure.
For kids your age, younger, growing up, when you're growing up and you look out on the TV or when you're out in public, you expect the adults to be acting like adults?
Absolutely. Yes. Because when they're not, that shows people that shows the kids that they can, I can do whatever I want. And I can
probably do it better than us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and crazier and wilder, right?
Yeah. So I'm like,
if adults are not acting like adults, acting childish or doing stupid things, then the kids are like, oh, I can grow up and I can do that too. Like, it's fine. There's no consequences. But if there is an adult role model who is, you know, teaching them and showing them how to act, it is very helpful. It's been really helpful for me. But not only that, even when Colton, before he was an adult, I feel like he's always kind of been that adult role model for me.
You know, so to your point too, Marcus, I remember having a bunch of the kids were over, you were there, McKenna, and Colton and a bunch of his friends and stuff. And I said, you know, who do you guys actually look up to? Because remember when we were younger, you'd have posters of people or astronauts or whoever, right?
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. And then, and they sat there and they were like, nobody. Somebody said Jesus. And I was like, cool. That's perfect. Who
Stick
else is alive?
One. Everybody
yeah.
else comes short. It will fall
and there
way
was a, but you know who this guy is? He was a Texan football player.
J.J. Watt.
Yeah, J.J. Watt.
Okay, one he's of them good
said,
too.
Yeah. So one of them said J.J. Watt. Literally, not one other kid had any other adult that they looked up to. That's a problem. Because adults are acting foolish. Yeah.
Well, when adults act foolish, then it feels like everything's unstable. It feels chaotic
yep.
because who's in control?
Yep.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, not to get into politics, but we look at our, you know, our government now. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I felt like everything was stable. There's rules. You have to follow them.
There were adults up there.
Right. Yeah. And now it's like, what is going on?
They're foolish. They're liars. They're
yeah. I mean,
they care more about what the kids think of them than actually running the show.
Thank
and that's
you.
Why everything's in chaos. Because if we do things in front of you, that means that it's an adult thing.
Yep.
And you want to be an adult. So you're going to act
right.
like we do.
Yep.
And let me tell you something. If we pass that down too many generations, there's not going to be much left.
Yeah. We're getting there.
Well, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't want to scare y'all. We're going to fix this. Don't worry.
And I tell them, I'm like,
or
y'all
you
need
will.
To fix it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You guys need
I was like,
to.
Hey, man, we obviously can't act right.
Yeah.
Maybe y'all should.
Yeah. Make sure your
what
generation
kind of therapy
does.
Is that?
I don't know.
Hey, here, let me look. Yeah. We're
a mess.
We're goners. We're yeah. a mess. You know,
but y'all can do it.
You
we
can't
know
believe
it.
The childhood we had. I know yours is tough. Nothing compared to ours, right?
Yeah.
We didn't even have the internet. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, iPhones.
Exactly.
Hit them with that, right?
Yeah.
Start blaming them. It's your
yeah.
fault.
It's your fault.
Yeah, right?
If it all goes to shit, it's your fault.
Kids.
Yeah.
They get
yeah.
away everything. We were having a blast.
Do you know what? I know. Well, people say that too. They're like, oh, the next generation. But you know what? That's what we see in the media.
Right.
Outside of the media, you got kids like, you know, Hunter and Colton and McKenna
yeah,
and their friends and Axe and Addie. Like, there are a lot of them that are squared away.
We're not the ones protesting and making a fool of ourselves.
Yeah, that really drove her nuts the other day. Like, the Hamas
you
protesting.
You got that much time to do
that?
What else do you do?
Hamas.
That's what I'm
you
saying.
Don't have a job?
It's like,
I mean,
you
what,
really don't
what
have
What is it
you
do in life
do?
Where you have all that time?
Mm-hmm, exactly. And are you ignorant? Like, have you not researched what you're talking about?
Well, you can see them. I was watching the news the other day, and the protesters, if you look close enough, some of them, they have those helmets on.
Yeah.
Some of them have them on backwards.
I'm not
and
surprised.
When you try and watch them push something down, they all fall down. It's kind of when you look real close at what's going on in there, then it's kind of like,
I have a thought. So a lot of people want to blame this generation. There are a lot of problems with this generation, no doubt about it. But you got to think you're the ones raising this generation.
Exactly.
You talking about the baby boomers?
Just anybody that complains about
anybody
it.
There's
something real wrong with the baby boomers. You're right.
Yeah.
There's definitely something wrong with my generation, okay? Gen X, for sure.
For sure.
We never stood a chance, okay?
Yeah.
But we're trying real hard.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Is you can't really blame the people that you're supposed to be teaching them.
You're right. You were absolutely right, Colton. It is absolutely my fault.
No.
And it's my generation's fault that y'all have this turmoil.
Yeah.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Because we're the ones above you. We're the adults. We're supposed to be running the show. And we're not doing that.
Yep.
And y'all know that. And you can call me on it because it's an absolute fact. And I'll take full responsibility for that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, I will.
Yep.
As an adult. I take full responsibility for all the chaos that's going on in this country right now. It is not your fault. It is mine. And we're going to do our best to fix it.
Except I wouldn't place, like, singular. I don't think it's your fault.
Yeah. Somebody, hey, you want to blame somebody? Blame me. You need a face? Put it on me. I'll take every bit of it. Tell all your friends. If it's, hey, man, if you're having a bad day,
Marcus
is doing something to me.
Yeah, he's being
that's
a dick
fine.
Again.
I'll take the hit.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the only one that can.
Yeah,
all right,
exactly.
So just know that this is not y'all's fault.
I think it actually gets shifted to your brother.
Because I'm going to put it on my brother. Y'all give it to me, and then I will systematically throw it on my brother.
Perfect.
So, he's
don't ever
the
feel
one
sorry for me.
Running the country.
Or him.
Yeah.
His brother.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're designed for this.
You're not running the country, but
we mean that to the bottom of our hearts, man. Y'all.
this is not y'all's fault.
No, it's true.
This is our
fault.
And
I think this is the group, though, this age. Maybe not the one right before it, because, and I don't want to be hateful about it, but sometimes it's like they're a little bit maybe more entitled, maybe. So maybe we watched that generation and kind of said, okay, we're going to fix it for this one. A little bit, right? And so, well, maybe a lot. But I asked one of McKenna's friends at a Bible study, a girl, and I said, let me ask you something. Do kids your age respect adults, and can you tell me anybody in your school who you see being respectful to an adult? And this is, by the way, an exemplary school, public school, okay? It's like top rated. She sat there and she thought for probably 30, 40 seconds. She goes, honestly, no, none. They don't respect any of them. Like, none. They don't, like, word respect is different than I'll do what you say. Like, okay, they'll do what they say.
That's different.
Respect. Yeah. They do not respect them. And that's a problem. And you can't respect somebody who has no authority. And the kids will say they have no authority. They actually can't really touch me. They can do this and they can do that, but they actually can't, right? I mean, don't kids say, like, the teachers are stupid. They can't really do anything. Not stupid academically, but, like, you don't believe that you'll really get in trouble for much, right? Like, kids
I don't know. Some kids think that because they know that at home, their parents
won't. Come from hard families.
That's right.
That's what that is.
Yeah, their parents won't do anything, so it's like getting in trouble at school. Well, like, I can go home and everything's fine.
Right.
But I'd say for me, like, getting in trouble at school, that's scary because it's like, oh shoot, I don't really have to deal with it here.
My kids can't come home.
Yeah.
Just stay. Don't
come home. If it ever makes it to me, and I know they act up.
Yeah.
Kids do that.
Make sure it doesn't get to dad.
It doesn't make if it better not get to me, because that's the end all.
Yeah, so I think it depends on, again, the adults around them. But I also do feel like from the schools I've been to, a lot of the authority, they seem to be in that job because they like to have control of things, and they don't. There are some that enjoy teaching or children or things like that, but a lot of them, they seem to really just enjoy power and control.
Yeah, so I think, and whether they do or not, and that might be like maybe as teenagers we all kind of thought that, but I think the difference is a lot of them don't have the freedom to actually teach the way they want to teach. So they're just doing it in a regimented, this is what I have to do, teach way, which takes away all, I know. And
well,
McKenna, you might be right.
Don't discipline at home. Yeah. It's not their job to do that. They're supposed to teach. So if y'all go in there and act up, then that automatically takes away from it. Just think about it like that. I mean, it's double. If you want respect, then if you act like a kid and they can't do their job and they have to discipline, then it's taken away from everybody else.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why that's a problem.
And they're teaching to the test, which also sucks. But
well,
don't
we
get
started
me started.
Doing all, that's a whole different rabbit hole.
Yeah, exactly.
I do not believe in teaching to test. Mm-hmm. I think that's so stupid.
Yeah.
I don't understand why anyone thinks that's a good idea.
Well, there's a thing I just saw on Instagram, but and I don't know these people, but it was like the one room schoolhouse or red door school.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
Right? And I'm like, this is the way we need to go back to it. Like those kids are out there, all the ages in one room, you know, but they're chickens and, you know, taking care of the land, and they're learning all the math and science. I'm like, that's, I think, because then you have respect, right? Because then you're in charge of things that matter.
A lot of schools popping up that are similar to that, like the Apogee program.
Okay.
In Houston, there's a school called, I think it's the Western, it's called Western, and it's an all-boys school, and all of the instructors are former military.
Okay.
And they teach them. They
I can
even
be intense.
I was like, that sounds terrifying.
Yeah. Well, they have.
I could be good. I'll turn into
good, bad.
I don't know. They have like, and I need to do my homework on this, but I'm pretty sure like they even have like chickens they have to take care of. It's academics. It's life lessons.
Yes. That's a discipline right there.
Yeah, yes. It's all kinds of things that they. It's just all encompassing at the school.
Yeah,
that's where you need to send the alpha bull, which you call bullies at a young age.
Yep.
If you put them around the men in there, their teachers, and this is, then they can't.
Yeah, that's true.
What those are for.
Although I will say, it's the only part that, like, you know, not every veteran's a good guy either. And so, like, it's kind of scares me.
We're different. Right? Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
They actually are teachers too by profession.
Yeah, good men.
So,
you'll know they'll go back through their training cycle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you see somebody stuck into a position that didn't have to go back through some training, then you're like, oh.
Yeah. All right. Watch out.
Watch out,
So tell me about the foundation and how you've involved the kids with it.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's Taya and Chris Kyle Foundation. It's a very long name, but Service Marriage Strong is the thing. So, you know, the marriage part of this, 80% of service suicides are relationship related, not because of the people in it doing, like, you know, things wrong or incorrectly or lack of love. They don't have the tools they need for a service marriage. They just don't. It's different than a civilian marriage. And when they're already traumatized or already hurting, and then the one safe place or the one thing at home isn't working, that can be the last straw, right? And it's not the failure of the spouse that survives. Sometimes they feel like they're the failure and they just want to eliminate their role and think that their spouse will do better. But we've seen phenomenal results, and Baylor University studies our programs. It's 2 years, 5 programs. And I say that because marriage is not a quick fix. And today's world, we all want a quick fix, right? Because we get quick fixes. We can look anything up instantly. We can buy anything instantly, you know. But marriage is one of those longer things. And so it's programs designed from strengths. So like we're coming in to coach them on their strengths and how to use their strengths in marriage. So it's not like come in and we'll get into counseling about your weaknesses. No, it's like you're warriors. So let's come in, and the warrior women that they marry, like let's get into it. So they do the a coach with a couple, and then they do the women separately or in a small group, men separately in a small group. Which, by the way, the men's group was the one that I was like, I'm gonna drag my feet on it a little bit. I should not have, because they are so hungry for a group of men that can talk about real things. I mean, we talk about sex, finance, intimacy, communication, the four horsemen, the things that get in the way, the anger, you know, all the things. And they're so hungry for other men, because men don't do that. Like, they're not going to talk about it with their work people, because they're just not. They're not going to talk about it on a golf course or just sitting around, because if you're, you know, having drinks with your friend, it just... So they're craving this small community to talk about marriage and the things that actually matter and have the tools to implement. So that's been an incredible...
Plus knowing that everyone that you're with is going through the same type of thing.
Yes. Thank you, McKenna. Yes. It's like, it's knowing that you're not alone in your thoughts that you've kept all to yourself, right? And it's mixing first responders and active duty and veteran has been huge too, because then it's not like, oh, we all went through it together and we're all... It's like you see the differences and the nuances. We have like a 99.16% success rate over the last like 10 years. I mean, it's incredible. And I say that all the credit goes to the people in the program. They just needed the right tools. And we happen to, by the grace of God, have them and have continued to develop them. And I'm just inspired by them. Like the fact that they'll take time out of their day to show up and really try to, we have people on brink of divorce that are like on their second honeymoon, and it always impacts the kids. Always. Like the happiness of your marriage impacts your children.
We forget all that when you get married and you have kids.
Yep.
I had to consciously one day just throw myself back at that age and remember what it was like when the parents argued in front of me. Remember that feeling you get underneath your diaphragm? It kind of sticks in there and you don't know what to do. It's a real fear. That's a real fear.
Yeah.
When your parents are fighting.
Yeah.
And I remember it happened to me the other day, because she said I was going to do something, and then she corrected me, and I thought, obviously, as a man, I was like, well, you didn't say it like that.
Exactly.
That kind of deal. And said it like that out loud, just joking with her.
Yeah, yeah.
But I could feel the room change when I did that, and I had to think about that a lot now.
Yeah.
Because when the problem with the guys in the military is we forget where we're wrapped in.
Yeah.
And then when we go into the military, we're taught to do a certain thing a certain way.
Yeah.
Like you were talking about the horsemen. Yep. We run the horsemen a different way.
Yep.
You can't run those things the same way for to control a marriage.
Truth.
It destroys it.
Yep.
So there was nothing ever written for us for that.
That's right. And changing your mindset, right?
Correct.
From the work to come home.
One of the cool things about our generation, if we have anything to contribute down here,
exactly,
is the fact that we're pulling everything together, right?
We're starting to,
Okay, cool.
No, I agree. But you know, to your point about when your parents argue, so like everybody has different experiences. And when mine would have an issue, I don't recall ever like hearing them out loud, but I would know, like my mom would be crying or something. I instantly hated my dad for it. And I continued to do that. And it really hurt my dad's like one of my favorite people, and I know him now, but growing up I didn't. And I don't know that he would ever be aware of that, you know? And so we don't realize as parents how much our kids are being affected, how our relationship with our children is affected by what's happening in our marriage, right? It goes generationally. We've noticed that, like, they're having more fun with their kids now. Their kids are happier because the parents have the tools, and the kids are learning new tools too, right? Did you have something on that?
Yes. Yeah. So this isn't involving the kids part, but just the marriage part. Like, I've seen that working with a lot of the sheriff's deputies and being around them, just they always tend to talk about, even if I don't ask them, they tend to talk about how their marriage is really important to them, and it is also very important that they do things differently, because it's like one officer told me that he, when he gets home, he wants to relax, but he knows that his wife has been taking care of the kids, taking care of the house, and doing everything all day, so he does anything he can to help her. Like, if he can do the dishes, if he can clean something, if he can help with the kids, if he can get them to bed, stuff like that. Because he says, like, that's just so important for his marriage. And another one has told me, when I talked about my mom's foundation, he was telling me that he said, yes, that's so important, and that they don't have the resources, and that regular therapists, civilian therapists, they don't know how to help either, because I was talking about that and he was agreeing. He said, yes, he was in a different position before, and he had to step out of that because it was really affecting his marriage, and they went to therapy over it, and the therapist couldn't help, couldn't do anything. They didn't know what to do, and so he had to step out of his position for his marriage. And so I have a lot more of them, but it's just, they always talk about how it is, like, it's different, and
it's hard.
They need extra help.
They do, and I'll meet Vietnam veterans and tell them about our programs. To your point, McKenna, they'll say, I wish we had a program like yours, because my wife and I went to therapists, but they couldn't help us because they didn't know the different lifestyle makes a huge, I mean, you know, that lifestyle is totally different, and it's less than 1% of the population that serves. So who are the people that are going to, you know, teach them? And we actually have a program that we developed with Baylor for peer-to-peer counseling in the military. So Leidos has picked it up, where we're teaching the peer-to-peer counselors how to use our tools to help the marriage, because I think everybody wants to do it. And how many of them are on second and third marriages? I mean,
yeah, a lot of them are. They tell me, like, they're the stereotypical, they're on their second marriage or third marriage.
So they want to be married.
Part of the job.
Yeah.
They say that, and it rolls off so easy. And a lot of those organizations, they do that. It's unbelievable. The word we use, help, throws everyone off.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost, you need to call it advanced training.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or something else.
Strength training. That's what we call it. Yep. Yep.
Mental discipline, wife training, life training.
Yes.
Something like that. Because when you go in, you don't know anything. Mm-hmm. So when you become a parent, there's plenty of books on how to be a father. None of them are right.
Exactly.
They're all about their kid.
Exactly.
That's not going to help you.
Yeah.
I mean, the diaper stuff, that stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
But as soon as those suckers can communicate,
they're their own person.
That's God's little gift to you. You wanted an instructor, got one for you.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, tailor-made to fit.
Yeah, it's true, to teach you everything.
And they'll draw everything out of you as they're growing up that you didn't pick up on the way up.
Yep.
And when you see it like that, it changes everything. That's God's comedy. He's got a great sense of humor.
True.
So where did the couples go? Is there a facility that you have in Dallas?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. It's tacf.org, and we do it all online, which I was convinced was not okay for marriage until COVID hit, and we started doing it online. And Baylor is still studying it, and the results are still phenomenal. And I'm like, we can help so many more people then if we can do this online. So tacf.org, and then they can sign up and apply. And it's all application. It's free to them. They don't pay anything. It's all donors.
Do you ever have retreats, like, in person?
I would like to. We used to, like I said, and we haven't. And they do say, like, we're so bonded to these people. After our programs are over, they stay in touch. I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be a lifetime, because they're years later and they're still all in touch with their small groups.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to be able to do that. We just need more funding. So right now it's a decision between, do we get more people coaching and strength training, or do we do retreats? So we've focused on the training, but I would love to have more donations so that we can do retreats.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I love that y'all do that. I mean, I know that you've done it forever, but I didn't realize how much it's grown and that Baylor's actually involved in studying it. That's so cool.
I'm not very good about advertising all that stuff, you know, either. Like, we're so busy doing the work that I forget to, like, spread the word, but I do want people to know, because it's a great program.
Do you get on and coach?
Interesting you say that. I don't, but when I do one session. I do the intimacy session for the women, and then I'll do some of the focus groups for the men after they're done. And then I've developed the curriculum, so, like, all the stuff, say the basics, and then I let the professional coaches do their professional work. But when McKenna was talking about wanting to be a coach, our COO Megan, who's amazing, was like, "You need to get trained up with her." And, you know, I said, "Well, why would I do that if I'm not going to be a coach?" She goes, "You just never know." So I think she has, like, thoughts of it, but you know, I just feel like I'm overcommitted as I am.
That's because you're a celebrity. And so, people walk up to you inadvertently.
Yeah.
So when you're standing there and you can see something, you just throw that little nugget out there at them and it's good to go.
Let's get some done. Is that, instead of doing it myself, you mean?
No, as if you went through there to get the training.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
What I'm saying. Then you're coached up. So yeah. You don't actually have to activate. But you know how the boss works, man. He'll deliver people to you all day long.
That's
just
true.
Because of who you are.
Yeah, that's what God does.
Yeah,
that's true.
That happens to you all the time.
It does. It's interesting. And you're the first person I remember, Marcus, you told me this, and I've shared this with a lot of people, but you said, Taya, you don't have to be planning so much. You're like, just show up. Just show up each day and do what you do, and God's got it covered, and he's already got the plan for your day. And so, you know, yeah, of course, put things on the calendar or whatever, but I take such comfort in that of just show up. You already knew what you were going
to
do today.
Let me say it a different way to you then, okay? So you're still walking around trying to put the work in, but God's already put the work in you.
Yeah, exactly.
So then now he's sending the stuff to you, and you keep running to others everywhere else.
Yeah, just take what he's sending.
Sit still and freaking.
Wait, did God just talk through you? I think he just talked through you. Sit still. Slow is smooth. Smooth is fast. 100% true. 100. You're good at that, I think. Like taking it as it comes, and you know, sometimes I have to like pull myself back too. McKenna, what are you? I don't know. I'll know when I get there.
So, what do you want to do now, McKenna? What are you looking at when you grow older and you
like job wise?
Yeah, what are you thinking?
It's
still early. I didn't mean to put that on you. You don't have to give me an answer.
Yeah, you're for the record, she's graduating high school this month.
Yeah,
so.
But she thinks about it.
Yeah, so.
I mean, we might want to start thinking about
exactly.
it.
You know? Yeah,
I
mean, exactly.
He's trying to do bothering me to help out a little
do
bit.
Do your job, right? Exactly. Thank you.
So I've thought about, like she said, I've thought about being a coach for her foundation because I feel like that really is so important. And I love psychology, but I don't think I would want to be a therapist. Just I don't know, I feel like I also have an interest in law enforcement, so that combines the two, and I love what she does. That is an option. Another thing I'm thinking about is the more I'm around sheriff's deputies and stuff, that's something that I think would be really cool. I haven't made up my mind on that, but it's definitely an option that I'm considering.
Tell Marcus what your concerns were about being a deputy before we about the danger and your family worrying and
that I didn't want it to hurt my family or something.
Yeah, because you can relate to that. Like if you choose something that you feel called to do.
I get that.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. You should feel that. That's how you know you love each other, because there's already been an opportunity and a situation that presented itself that
didn't go well.
Was the other side of our life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you got to have those. That's part of it.
But if you're called, you got to do it.
Yeah,
right?
I mean that, you know, that's part of
it. It's literally like getting back on the horse.
Yeah, you can't help what's inside of you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're the next version, right? Yeah. Better. And then the things that you talked about, there are jobs online now, they're relatively new, that have all of those.
Yeah.
And one thing. So you're something
all
new.
All of what?
All of the psychology, the police officer, that tucked into one person.
Yep.
There used to be analysts and there used to be agents. Yeah. Now they're hybrids. And
so those you're talking like FBI?
Whatever. I don't know. The one beautiful thing about America is we evolve.
Yeah.
So one organization comes on and we run it for a while, and another one will come online, and those two things will marry.
Yeah.
And then whatever comes out of that is our newest form. And that's what we're going through right now as a country. We're a transition of power. One generation's going out, one's coming in, and then there's the brand new ones on the ground who are voicing their opinions. The alphas are online now. So we're going through that.
We had a lady on the podcast, it was over a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, that she was actually kidnapped when she was a teenager. She was our age, so pre-iPhone, you know, not being able to call someone in the moment. She was kidnapped. It was a horrible thing, but she was able to escape her captor after several days of being in captivity. And she ended up becoming really close with the local law enforcement, and they kind of took her in and let her do ride-alongs and that kind of thing. And she ended up becoming a victim advocate, where when there was any kind of domestic issues, especially involving teens or children, she would go in and talk to them and like follow up with them and stay in touch just to make sure that they were doing okay. So I never realized that there were roles like that within law enforcement until she told us that. So. Yeah. There's, you know, stuff like that if you're interested in both the psychology side and the law enforcement side.
Or the criminal
lines. I also think, though, I feel like I do love psychology, but if I had the realistic option to be a sheriff's deputy. I feel like that's what I'd want to do. Because I feel like I'd want to be in it more than on the outside helping, I guess.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, all aspects of it are very important, and it's very important that we have people to do all of those things. But I think personally, I'd rather be in it.
They need you in the mounted patrol, you know, where they're on the horses and chasing. They have to chase livestock and stuff in Fort Worth.
Yeah.
So their mounted patrol basically goes out and has to chase all the animals that are loose and stuff. Okay, I have a question for you just to shamelessly go back to Prayers for Bears for a minute. So the story is based
on... Yeah, let's talk about the book.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about gratitude. And so in this book, it's all about being grateful for the little things. And I think it's one of the most important things that we can teach our kids, right, is gratitude for the little things. Especially, we talked a little bit about generations being entitled or this or that, right? And wanting all the big things and wanting them immediately, but how gratitude plays a role. So I would love to have you talk about gratitude, Marcus, and how it's played a role in your life. And then Melanie and McKenna, because I think some of the gratitude is coming back to you that was gone, and it made such a difference in your life too. So I'm curious, Marcus, tell me about gratitude.
So both sides of it, the giving and the receiving, that's two different things altogether. All right. And then there's stuff that follows that, like graciousness that comes along with that grace. All right. But you can't believe what that does to somebody when you throw your gratitude on them. I mean, there's all kinds of weight that we can send on people just by the tone of your voice, the way you say your words, and the way you can change the room just by feeling a certain way if you're upset enough.
Yeah.
You're old enough now
100%.
To know that.
Yep.
Okay. The older you get, the stronger that gets. Like these women right here, especially if they've been through some heartbreak, man, they can change the room. They can activate that machine and turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody goes out of their way to do something exceptional for you, please give them your gratitude. It's like this, it's like a spirit jump that you can throw into them. They can feel it. They'll remember it forever. And how you know that is when you get it. If somebody gives it to you. And if it's followed with their grace, if it's given through their grace, then they won't ever ask for anything back. Like it's a, probably won't even say anything.
Yeah.
Like it'll just be sitting there or something will happen. And there is a... There's remarkable feelings that activate through certain gifts of kindness that you bestow upon your fellow man and woman that you can only get from that. No drug you will ever be able to take will ever replicate that. And once you know how to activate it, and once you know how to look for it, it's like looking for any other thing down here, knowledge, wisdom. You can go after those feelings and like surf them. And it's amazing. That one is the best. Because when people give that, they rarely do that. You kind of got to, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like
you
yeah,
have to
yeah.
put some work in for it. And that's what you want. Like there are certain things in each human. If you do something, you're like, I've come here for your gratitude. I'm going to do, you know, that kind of thing. It's like a drug to me.
Yeah. Service.
Thankfulness, stuff. All that comes through stepping up. And what you do is you eliminate all the fear and doubt in your mind because what do you care? You're not there for you. You're there for that.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens to you, is when all bets are off and you just run with the wind.
That's good. I like it. What are you grateful for?
My list is so long now for things that I'm grateful for that I just say thank you. Yeah. Just thanks, God, thank you. You're the best. Now you're just showing off, right?
That yeah, exactly.
I mean, I get to that conversation yeah. with them. Like, it yeah. gets to the point where I'm sitting around and I'm like, now you're just showing off. You
yeah.
know what I'm talking about? I mean, you go be good to somebody else.
Yeah.
I got enough.
Yeah.
You can well up on it. You can fill up, like once you realize this is really happening and it's all this great stuff comes down on you, man, you can get so much of that goodness inside of you. They'd be like, that's enough, man. Give it to somebody else. It's tough to do that because life's designed to throw those little wickets in there, those little shots of despair or whatever you want to call it. Okay, check. But just, you know what I'm saying. You've been through it. All right, so just keep pushing forward.
Yeah, and you're grateful even for the lessons that are hard, it sounds like. Like you were saying that even when suffering. Your kids challenge you. Yeah,
yeah suffering's yeah. the best.
I want to talk to you more about that at some point.
Well, don't worry. I got plenty to say to you. I just had to wait for you to get old enough.
I am grateful for security. Like, just overall, something I prayed, like, my whole life is just to feel safe. Like, not safe from being physically hurt or anything like that, but just have, like, a safety net built around me. Like, a loyal, safe family. I think... I experienced so much divorce and like family tearing apart my whole life that I just wanted to have that family, like the husband that would never leave. So I'm grateful for you. That's what one of the reasons I moved around as a kid so much. I never felt stability. I went to 5 high schools. So with Hunter, he gets mad at me because I made him go to the same school from pre-K to 12th grade.
Oh, perfect. Correcting mistakes.
Because I wanted him to have what I didn't. Yeah. I probably went a little overboard on that. Probably should have let you go to public school. Sorry. But it is something I prayed for my whole childhood, and I'm grateful that God gave me that now. So that's,
you're such a loyal and loving person too, that I can see why you'd be like, why am I not having this? And so when you do have it, you give everything to the network of people you have around you.
Careful what you wish for. I'm like a bad rash, man. Exactly. I ain't going nowhere. You got to grow old with me, and I'm going to live a while,
exactly.
Okay?
I'm like, you married the right guy, too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. You can do exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. How about you, McKenna? What does gratitude mean to you? And
It's definitely important. It's makes a big difference in the... I feel like it in itself is a different mentality. Mm. It's been a little difficult for me because it's been a habit of me just looking for the negative, but I feel like that also makes it that much better when I do feel gratitude. And that's not to say that I don't feel grateful, because I do. I feel very grateful for everything I have, and I know I'm lucky to have what I do have. I don't really know what to say on that, but it makes a huge difference.
I think that you just said it, is you recognize the difference it's made in your life to have gratitude. And Melanie, it's interesting when you just said about Hunter, you were like, hey, sorry, you know, you're at that school the whole time. When I think about parenting, I go, you know what? God knew who I was and who I would be when he gave me the kids he gave me. So he's not surprised by anything I've done, the missteps or the things. I mean, gosh, McKenna was like, fine, I'm pulling you out of this school. Fine, I'm putting you here. Fine, I'm pulling you out of this. Right? And sometimes I can look back and go, ugh, what, you know? But I'm like, well, God knew what he was doing. And he knows how they'll overcorrect for whatever we did. Like, Hunter might have his kids in 10 different schools. I don't know. But but you also took him traveling, to be fair.
Each grade, different school.
You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. 12. Exactly, 12 different schools. I'm doing you a favor. Hey,
don't argue.
Yeah, exactly. Don't
argue. I've got to one-up you on that.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you did it. You did different things. I mean, the kids see more of the world than most people will ever see. So, yeah. Well, I am very grateful for you guys. I know this book, it started when a friend of mine, after Chris was killed, I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this with the house. I don't know what we're going to do. And she said, you'll always have a roof over your head and food to eat. And I said, I don't know about the roof over my head. And she said, no, Taya, you have people who love you. There will always be somebody that will give you. Not everybody has that. And so to this day, we pray, you know, we're grateful for the roof over our head and our food to eat. And then the Bailey the bear learned some of that too. And learning the things that we take for granted, that a lot of people would give anything for, is kind of the motto of it.
I love that.
Yeah.
We, Marcus read the book to Addie when she was sick. Our kids were sick with the flu for like 3 weeks.
Yes,
it was crazy.
Awful. Yes.
And we got the book right during that time period, and he sat and read the book to her. And yeah, it's a very, very sweet book for any age of kid.
Yeah, I read to my kids.
Do you know, so when fathers read to kids, they have a greater literacy rate usually, and are more, statistically, they're more inclined to be readers themselves. Same if their dad is in faith, you know, has faith, they're more inclined to have faith as they grow up. And I saw on Instagram when you had your Dr. Dad jacket on.
I was
going
to mention that, yeah.
Is that not the coolest thing?
I love that, yeah.
That would be a legacy thing.
Yeah.
Dude, that's the coolest thing.
Really?
Like, to have a dad, yes, to have a dad wear a doctor's jacket and come check on, well, me and McKenna, like, it's so loving, right?
Yeah,
and it's
that's awesome.
He's been doing it since the kids were toddlers. And before it was just him. So when the kids were about 4, I ended up ordering them doctor's jackets too. Aww. So I actually have pictures, and I never posted them. I wish I would have. I have pictures of like when Axe was sick, or I think maybe he had a splinter or something, and Addie put her doctor jacket on. Marcus puts his doctor jacket on, and they both go to work on Axe. Or when Addie was getting her tonsils out when she was five, Axe,
that was the coolest one.
Yeah, Axe had his doctor jacket on. Oh. Marcus put his on, and he made, like, mimicked what it would look like going rolling into surgery so she wouldn't be scared.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And he had a flashlight, and he was shining it down on her face, and he was saying all the things that the doctor would say before she goes in so she didn't have the fear of going into the surgery room. She was five. And that was just one of the neatest moments with Marcus. And then there was this time period where they didn't get sick.
Yeah.
I mean, they just never got sick. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, they got this horrible case of, I mean, years they went by not getting sick. And then they get this horrible case of the flu. And Marcus walked up with the doctor dad. And I was like, oh, I love this man so much.
So much. So much.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's legacy stuff. I feel like McKenna's always throwing in the jokes, so I'll do it. I bet you wish you had a dad.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I did.
How'd you take that? Was it awesome?
I mean, I bet she wishes she had a husband who did stuff like that too.
That's all right. I know exactly.
Yeah, all right, that's good. Yeah. If you guys got that, that's squared away.
Because right? We were like, we'll be
I'm
in the
grocery really worried about y'all anymore.
We'll be in the grocery store and like there's a like if there's a dad doing something like with their kid or whatever, she's like, must be nice to have a dad.
Yeah. You know,
like,
oh, just, my gosh.
And we laugh about it because it's like, yeah. I mean, obviously it's not, yeah. We just got to laugh about it. It's like funny.
I have to ask, do y'all, because there are so many great pictures of Chris with the kids and even the video. I remember being at your house right after he died and seeing a video of him reading to Colton when he was like a baby or a toddler. Do y'all ever just sit and watch those videos or have you, is that a time period passed?
Do you want to answer or you want me to?
We have, but you can answer that. I don't.
So for a while, I think when they were younger, I would say like, hey, how are you guys feeling? Like, would you like to see videos? And they'd be like, no, we're good. We're good. I think it was more the missing and the hard parts. You know how that is. There's such a process with grief of when you want, there's stuff all around you. And when you're like, I can't have it around me at all. Sure. And I got to, so just recently, there was a company that wanted to do a documentary on us and like our healing. And so we went through some home movies and Colton was doing something else, but McKenna and I were at my big computer desktop thing, like watching movies and just laughing and having a great time. And you've gone through times where you've actually surprised me. She would watch, like you went online and YouTube and watch a ton of dad videos.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to speak to that or was it hard for you?
Only the Conan O'Brien one where he was an idiot.
Dad was an idiot? That was so
no,
funny.
Not oh, Dad. Condon?
No, you're talking about
oh,
Bill O'Reilly.
Shoot, my bad.
Conan O'Brien was really funny, and he loved him.
He's you're a redhead.
Yeah.
My bad. You're talking about Bill O'Reilly, I think.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Your dad and I did a lot of rounds on Bill O'Reilly.
When Bill kept pressing your dad, is that what you meant?
He was like, oh, okay, so you like killing people.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think that's been interesting. And I think, Colton will get into it a little bit later. I think, I mean, you'll talk to him in his podcast, but, it's been really fascinating. And I never wanted to push it. Like I never wanted to say, cause I know they love their dad and I know they miss their dad and they know I miss him and we've shared tons of tears over it and healing, but I never wanted to be like, okay, so even on his birthday, I'd go, hey guys, like dad's birthday is tomorrow. I don't know if you want to do anything with that or not. And a lot of times they'd be like, no, not really. And so I'd kind of go through it myself on those days. Only because I feel like there's and for some people it's great, but if you make a calendar day the day you have to feel something, it to me doesn't feel right. It's like we would cry when we cry. Genuinely, we miss him, you know. And we started doing famiversary instead of anniversary. So on our wedding anniversary, we'd celebrate being a family. We wouldn't be one if it wasn't for him. But yeah, for me, I think those days hurt for a while, right? But I would just kind of do it myself because I didn't want them to have to feel something on a certain day. They felt it enough, you know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like we all also
kind of like get a little down around the time that he was killed.
Yeah.
Like even without knowing, like sometimes I'll be like, I've been just feeling down lately. And you'll be like, yeah, it's close to that time.
Yeah, it literally is weird because you'll say it like a day or two or something. And I'll go, yeah, it's almost the anniversary of his death. You subconsciously know and remember whether you are paying attention to the calendar dates or not. And I remember you actually saying something I thought was so interesting. She was
we were driving the car and she goes, Mama, and she maybe was like 7 and a half, 8. She goes, how old was I when Dad died? And I said, you were 6, almost 7. And she said, oh, okay. And I said, why do you ask that? And she said, I think there will be a day in my life where people will ask me, how old were you when your dad died?
Oh my gosh.
I know. That's what I did too. I got choked up and I was like, you're wise. Yeah, that will be a thing. And so you should probably know that. Like, it's almost like she knew there will be a day of before my life and after, right? Like they're separated. And it's true. You lose somebody and it's like before Chris died and after Chris died are two totally separate, you know, I don't know, experiences.
That'll change again. Now you become an adult and get your job, if you go behind the badge too, if you put a shield up, then you'll just be like, I remember when I was a kid, when I was vulnerable.
Yeah.
I could get hurt in certain ways. And then that'll go away.
Yeah, interesting.
I now like that y'all are coming out into the public and your mom's kept you secret for so long, like no pictures ever posted or anything like that, and you're on social media now, how do you handle ever seeing anything negative about your dad? That's something that we have recently started, Marcus and I have talked about with our kids, because the little ones, Hunter's seen it for a long time, but the little ones of how do we prep them with negative media or negative people that just want attention and talk crap. Yeah. And they just say, they say straight up lies.
100%.
Just to get attention or bait click or whatever it is, whatever their reasoning is for coming out and saying things.
I think sometimes that depends on what it is, but most of the time I it does get me worked up sometimes. I'm like, you're stupid.
Yeah.
But I feel like I just try to ignore it most of the time. Like, it's whatever, you didn't know him.
Yeah.
You can say what you want, it's all right. Because it's, I feel like anything you watch of him, like even interviews, anything, any pictures you see of him, people who actually did know him, things like that, it's like, it's so obvious that that's when people are lying about him or saying negative things. It's like, you're just saying stuff to say stuff.
Yeah, like you didn't know him, obviously, or you would never
say
that.
Yeah, it's very clear that you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's good. I do remember thinking that, because I feel like I told the kids at an early age, like when American Sniper first came out, the internet was not so hateful, right? Mm-hmm. So when I would see negative things about Chris, my heart would start pounding and my hands would start shaking. And then I started to realize, wait a minute, that's just, like you said, it's just so far from the truth that you look like an idiot. Anybody that knows him will say that you're an idiot. It still sucked, right, to see it. But I think that as time went on, too, the internet and social media has become so good in a lot of ways and hateful in a lot of ways. And so you already know.
It's become rotten.
Yeah, it has, right? But, and they're good. Like, I notice there are good things and people share good content, too. But yes, like the comments, almost like people read it just to laugh because they know there's going to be somebody hateful. This generation, like, they laugh at things that I would not laugh at because they think this person's like such an idiot, meaning they don't internalize it the same way because they're so desensitized to people being stupid and lying. Mm-hmm. And so I think too, for Axe and Addie too, it's like they know their dad. And it maybe is a good lesson too. I remember Colton one time came home from school and there was a kid that was making fun of his socks. And he was sitting under, I remember exactly where he was, and he was really down. He goes, and I bought his socks at Walmart, you know, but they were having like the Nike socks were like a big deal. And anyway, and he was just kind of down. And I said, so yeah, that's hurtful probably. And he said, yeah, because I don't understand why, you know? And I said, yeah, your dad's pretty cool, huh? And he was like, yeah. And I said, it'd be so weird if somebody like hated him and like was, you know, degrading him. And he said, yeah. And I said, would it surprise you to know people do it all the time? And he was like, what? And I said, all the time. Mm-hmm. And I said, and it doesn't make him any less cool, any less great, any less anything. And he was like, oh yeah. And then, you know, we kind of talked about maybe this other kid, cause the mom and me came out too. And I was like, let me tell you about this other kid too. This kid that said that, you know, but there's a reason. If the socks are the only problem he can have with you, because everything else is on point, you know, then he's going to go after that. And I don't, there may be no connection. One of my friends said this years later, but there was a period of time in middle school where Colton just wore crazy socks, just funny, like they have like stupid, you know. And I was like, man, I don't know. Maybe that was a subconscious thing of like, yeah, I can wear anything.
F you.
Yeah, well, there's nothing, because it means nothing about me. Have at it. You know, it means nothing. But yeah, I think especially with your kids, they're going to look at it and be like, Mm-hmm. That's my dad. Like, it has nothing to do with my dad. That's everything to do with you.
That, and there's all the, there are the negative comments and the negative things that people say, but that, the amount of negative compared to the amount of people that respect you and look up to you and like all of that, it's like, okay, the, that means nothing because the amount of people that do know who you are and respect you.
Let me tell you something about me and your dad. Being silly, we don't give a damn.
Yeah.
What anybody says. You understand me? All around the world, people hate us. We're the most feared thing down here. If you got something to say, if you ain't saying it to my face, and then I can't even hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
Y'all need to keep that same attitude because there are people out there that are going to do that, and they're just punks. That's why they do it on there.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
and I understand that. I know it's not going to hurt Marcus, but I know that we have kids now.
Right.
And not only do we have kids, but they have friends.
Yep.
And it, you know, when the friends hear it and the, you know, it just becomes this whole thing. Like, why spread so much hatred, especially within, to our veterans, to the people that are literally going out there and risking or have gone out there and risked their lives and sacrificed a lot of time away from their families. I mean, think of all the deployments that your dad was on that you didn't get that time with him. And now someone's just spending their time just yapping, trying to make you hurt. Like, what is their goal? That just, it drives me crazy.
Well, what is their goal? Yeah, who are they to say? And I think it does say more about them. I think, too, for your kids, I would say, and I've said this to mine, there's nothing you can't ask me. You're not going to embarrass me. You're not going to hurt my feelings. Nothing. So if they, if you hear anything, just ask me. It's like, because they might not want to ask you thinking they don't want to hurt your feelings, right?
Yeah.
Or how you'd be protective and... I mean, I made it a point to never, ever lie to my kids on anything, not even like, you know, the fairy tale stuff. I was very careful about how I said it. And, you know, and I think once you have that, it's like, well, you can ask and I'll tell you. And I'm not going to say he was perfect. He wasn't, you know, and that's great. That made it more interesting, you know, like, and it's.
Well, it, and it makes them real.
Yeah, exactly.
They're human beings. And, but a lot of these haters just lie just to get attention. And I hope that, I'm glad that it doesn't affect you because when I see that as a mama bear of whether it's about anybody, it could even be people I don't know. Yep. When I see people hating on anyone, it drives me nuts because I'm like, there's a ripple effect to that. Yes. And it, there's family behind that.
Yes.
And your words might hurt someone so bad that you don't know what that consequence will be just because you were being hateful.
Oh, yeah.
So I,
yeah.
If you don't have anything nice to say, shut your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Also on like, on TikTok even, if there's a video and the first person who gets to the video has something rude to say, that's like, everyone's going to be like, oh yeah, we'll say something funny about it too. Like, we'll hate on them too. So it's like, they'll really follow whatever the first person to get there says. And so, like, why are you starting that? Why are you going to be the cause that this person gets all of this hate?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, why aren't you going to be the person that's going to give them, like, a bunch of motivation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if that there goes is a back problem to gratitude, with them, motivate them.
Yeah, like, why not? It's because misery loves company.
Yes.
And if we bring that back to gratitude, if we all just change our mindsets to, instead of being hateful and looking for something bad and going as far as making up lies about people, if you just flipped that switch and said something good about someone, that ripple effect is way greater than a negative one. Yeah. So if there was a little bit of good pushed out into this world and just gratefulness, it goes so much further.
You know, there's a, we were listening to a book on the way down here, and it was a letter to the American church, which I recommend, but there was a phenomenon, and it was a woman that followed, she was like part of the Nazi thing, and then came out of it and realized like, oh my God, he was so bad. But when she was following, she didn't think that, right? So she did a study, and it's called The Spiral of Silence. And so he's talking about how the German churches failed and why Hitler became so powerful. But the spiral of silence says, if you say nothing, it makes it harder for the next person to say something and the next person. So the more people that don't say anything, the less opportunity somebody will say something. So if you're speaking out against something, speak out. And like, I was thinking about just abortion or pro-life or something. And I thought, I told Colton, I said, yeah, when I see some other people who I respect say something, you know, pro-life, not anti people that have abortions, just pro-life. I go, yeah, you know what? We can say that thing. We can celebrate life without putting somebody else down. And so it's both are true, right? So like you said, if one person says something rude, it starts a spiral. If somebody says something nice in the face of somebody that says something rude, stands up to that, it also can buoy other people to do the same. So mm-hmm. to all of your points, we have a responsibility to add goodness to the world.
Yeah. Or even the first person to get there, if they say something nice, chances are there's only going to be a couple of negative comments. Most of the comments are going to be nice too. They're just people are literally sheep. They're going to follow whatever they're going to follow.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, thank you for coming on and sharing about your foundation and about Prayers for Brayers. Yeah. I love that. And just catching up.
It's so nice.
It's been so long.
Yeah, it has been a while.
And you're so grown up.
No. You ready? Ready for it?
Yeah.
There you go.
It's been a joy to watch you grow up. I'm proud of you. Thank you. And your brother. Your mom especially. She's a warrior. And we didn't really know what to do back in the day. We were just trying everything we had.
Amen.
Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, we just doing everything we could to stay moving forward. Mm-hmm. So.
Stay afloat.
You did great with it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I did want to ask one last question. Who do you look up to?
Bill Wayburn. He's definitely someone I look up to. My brother, for sure. My mom. I think those three.
You inspire all three of us, too.
Those are a good three. Bill Wayburn's a great guy. Shout out Bill Wayburn.
Yeah and that, she's dude? Running his social media, at Sheriff Wayburn on Instagram.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I'm going to have to follow him.
Yeah, I'm glad we butted up with him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, very good.
All right, good job, y'all.
All right, get
Thank
out.
Thank you.
I love you.
I love you, too.